Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balances, we talk about the heavy burden of how financial shame can feel and what some baby steps could look like to get past it. Stick around. That's coming up next.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Craftwork Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Craftwork Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Dan Maseka. Good to see you, dude.
It's great to see you.
We're getting ready for a little road trip. You and I are actually going on a visit to Charlottesville, Virginia together. By the time this airs, it'll already be over, but I'm pumped that we're actually going to do a little bit of traveling together.
Yeah, it's been our first time in many years that we've traveled together, and I'm hoping we come up with some great show content while we're on the road. If you follow us on Instagram, maybe we'll pop a couple fun stories into our feed.
Yeah, I had the idea of what if we actually did a show in the car, but I don't think that we are technically proficient enough at this to do it and then also not crash the car. But I did think it would be funny. Like, I think we could do one or the other. I think we could do a show, but it wouldn't be good. And I hope that people enjoy hearing us and want us to continue doing this. So we're not going to do that, but I do think we'll come up with some fun stuff riding around together.
I'm going to slap the notes feature on my iPhone open or whatever the audio recording feature is, and we can just do some live recording, and maybe the sound quality will stink, but that's what Alec is for. We have a producer who can doctor that all up for us.
We do. And hopefully we'll come up with some ideas. It's so funny the number of times that we say to each other, oh, I had a great idea for the show and I forgot what it was because I didn't write it down. And we have like a dumping ground, like chat in our communication tool for each other where we do put ideas, but we still seem to miss a lot of them. So hopefully we'll get some good stuff.
I'm the main detractor from our good ideas making it to the show because I, for some reason, don't write anything down, even though we have a very convenient place to pop them all that's accessible from my pocket in the phone. But
we don't know if they're good ideas or not, Dan. We just know that I don't know what those ideas are.
Until then, they're great ideas. I'm sure they stink, but every idea that
beautiful
I have...
Beautiful ideas until somebody hears them.
It's like every song that was ever in my mind that I wanted to write, and then I never got the chance to. I'm like, oh man, that was the best song. That was the one that was going to do it for us.
Yeah, fair enough. So today's topic, and I'm going to try and keep this from getting too heavy because it could. And that's not really where I want to go with it. But I do want to talk about something that's got pretty serious implications for a lot of folks in terms of how they think about it. And I'm kind of cobbling together several conversations that I've had in recent history and earlier in my career. And the conversation normally starts with some version of, I've had your number, I've had your name, I've been meaning to reach out, I've thought about this for a long time, and either didn't feel ready or was trying to work on something before we connected, or was some version of, I'm uncomfortable with what I'm going to find out as part of this discussion. And that is a shame in a number of instances, but that's really the word for what's happening here is I think a lot of people have shame around their finances. They have an internal dialogue. They have an internal struggle. They have an internal pain around how they think about their money. And in some cases, that is a very legitimate struggle that's going on. Things like bad debt issues and gambling addiction, or you know, even drug problems that are relating to that. And I don't really want to go down that path with it. So there are some things that are legitimately damaging health-wise, psychology-wise, that can be leading to this. But the other side of it, and I think the one that presents itself most commonly in our world, Dan, is I just don't feel like I'm doing enough or the right things, and it leads people to not wanting to talk to us.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to that feeling, even if it's not in the world of finances. I mean, think about how many people put off going to the doctor because they feel they haven't been their best selves from a physical standpoint, just, and they don't want to be told that. It's like, I already know that. I don't need someone to verify that for me. But one of the things that I think financial planners do best is just being that outside voice and a coach for people. It's so helpful to have someone, A, that you can vent to, B, that you can, you know, validate feelings with, and then also offering hope. I think you could be a good financial planner without making like life-changing financial recommendations and simply being that coach there on the sideline who can encourage you to move forward or take that little step forward that you weren't doing before, and then having some accountability for that too.
Honestly, in many cases, people just aren't in as bad a shape as they think they are. That happens so many times. And I don't want to harp on that being the example, because I don't want the message from this episode to be, come talk to us. I'm sure it's better than you think, because maybe it's not. And we don't know that. And then I look at how the role of a show like ours can contribute to some of that negative talk. And I've mentioned this before, but whenever we give a number example on this show, it's a scary thing for us to do. Because if we talk about somebody with $1,000 to their name, somebody in debt might feel like this isn't for them. Like they're in the hole. They don't have the means to even consider, what do I do with my first $1,000 to invest? And then if we talk about somebody with $100,000, then that person with $1,000 to their name that's worked their tail off trying to save or get out of debt is now discouraged. And if we talk about somebody with $1 million or $10 million, right? And we've seen all of those cases. We've talked to all of those folks. They've all come through my life experience as a financial planner at some point. Folks from a negative net worth to, I mean, literally I've sat down with people that have a $100 million plus net worth. It is hard to be in the worst shape. It is hard to be in the best shape if you're going to come talk to me. And I don't know if this comes from the fact that I've gone through my own financial trauma, that I try really hard not to judge people from where they are. I just think that's part of the process. There's nothing helpful about finger wagging about something that you've already done and can't change. There simply isn't. That's not a productive exercise. Regardless of what's happened, regardless of how good or bad it is, what we're doing is starting from today. What do we do from here? Because we can't go back. So I think approaching financial planning and financial discussions from that perspective has certainly been more healthy for me. But I also think that because I've made mistakes, because I've functionally gone broke, because I've, you know, screwed up early in my life and career, and who knows, could still do it again. Hope not. I've worked very hard to run from that trauma. I think I still work hard to avoid that situation today. I think that's still a driver in my brain. But I try really hard not to approach it from a finger wagging perspective, just a, hey, this is what we need to do. And I don't know. I can't tell if that's unique, if some financial planners are not coming at it from that, or if that's where the fear is coming from, of just that judgment. But at least for us, I think that's where we try and come at this from.
From what I've seen more recently than in the past, a lot of financial planning is box checking and the product of software outputs. And I think if you're seeking help from a financial planner and aren't in a traditional space for it, that process looks really terrible. And it feels really terrible too, because it's going to say, well, you're not going to save enough for retirement. You don't have an investment portfolio. This part doesn't apply to you. You need insurance that you can't afford. Here's what you should buy. And it's just not a satisfying feeling, where, again, I think you need someone who can speak to where you are in life, because no situation is hopeless. There's hope everywhere. And it's all about taking the baby step forward that you need. And sometimes it's not a dramatic step. Sometimes it's as simple as, you know, if you could put $10 away this month, you're going to be better off than you were last month. Let's figure out how we can do that one little thing. And then we can call that a victory and then move on to the next thing. Like it doesn't need to be a big grand plan. And then you just need the person there in your corner kind of giving you the shoulder massage saying, we got this.
My dad said something recently, and I'm sure I've heard this phrase before, but the way it hit my ear this time, I think was really powerful, and I appreciated it. And I've got tremendous love and respect for my dad on so many levels as a small business person and so many of the things that I've learned from him. And my dad doesn't seem to have that keep up with the Joneses thing. Even as a kid, you know, my parents run a hair salon. I used to ask him questions like, well, why don't you have 5 salons or 10 salons? This one that you're doing seems to be going well. You know, like why haven't you thought bigger? And it's because he was content. And I'm quite frankly still trying to learn that from him because it's fascinating. And I know that he just doesn't seem to have some of that anxiety around, I got to do more. We don't have what we want or what we need. He just hasn't ever had that or seemed to have that. It doesn't mean he hasn't dealt with financial pressures, but the phrase he used was, well, I've always looked at it as we can have anything we want, just not everything we want. And that's been, I don't know, the refresh of that in my brain is so powerful because I think there's so many people, again, I'm not going to say exclusively, but could have almost any of the lifestyle things that they're really thinking about, whether that's where they live or the type of place they live in or the type of car they drive or certain life experiences that they're trying to create. I think most of us have the ability to make that stuff happen as long as we're willing to look at trade-offs. I don't know that we can do everything that we want to do all the time. And I think that that is true at almost any level of wealth. Up and down the spectrum, even somebody as wealthy as Jeff Bezos probably can't do everything he wants to do. He could probably go pretty close. He can build a space company and ride a rocket into space. But I would bet somewhere there's some financial pressure for him where he's like, well, yeah, that might be too much. That's a crazy extreme example. But yeah, I just look at this and I think so much of it comes down to trade-offs and then being honest with ourselves about what's really important. But the thing that's really tough when you watch people go through this is how solitary that financial pressure can feel. You know, I look at this as if you're just making choices for yourself, if you're only dealing with your own stuff, I think most of us believe that even if we went completely bust, we'd be okay and we could rebuild. I could eat ramen. I could do this again. I could bet on myself. Whatever I have to do to get scrappy, I could probably do. What I wouldn't necessarily want to do is put a family through that. I wouldn't want to put a partner or people that are counting on me through that experience. And I think that's part of what leads to some of that really deep shame is how you're looking at how it's affecting other people.
And I think if you are going to go to a financial planner, that's why it's so much more important to approach that as a family initiative if you have a family, because it gives you the opportunity to talk to each other about that where you're probably not talking about that at home. I was sitting with people recently where there was a income imbalance and there was clearly shame from the lower income earner who felt that I wasn't speaking to him, or he interpreted that when we were talking about all these things that clearly I was directing all of that to the higher income earner and not to him. And he kind of checked out saying, all right, well, my stuff doesn't matter. He's like, but I have this question, when in reality, it's a partnership. And being able to hear them talk to each other about that and kind of explain that they're in it together and working together, I think that's important for them to hear and important to offer the platform for them to do that too. It's like therapy.
Yeah. And I mean, we've talked about kind of where that line is between therapy and financial planning before, because it does get muddy. It absolutely gets muddy. The number of folks, like if you don't have joint goals, if you've never had that discussion together, if you, you know, like I can't mediate the goals.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's just the truth. I can't come in and say, well, cool, you want this, you want this, so here's what we're going to do. Right. Like, that's not my choice to make. That's beyond the scope of what I can do. What I can do is understand, where do we collectively want to go? What are the pressure points to either getting there, or what are the obstacles that are going to prevent you from getting there, and help you navigate that? We can help create a strategy that will get closer. And we can't always close the gap entirely. Sorry, this is kind of an aside, but when I did a financial planning day, which is a pro bono day that Financial Planning Association and the CFP board participate in, they did a kind of pre-financial planning day session with us. And they basically said, a lot of you are used to trying to solve the puzzle. You may not be able to solve these puzzles. The objective is not to solve it. It's to move people one click, two clicks, three clicks closer to being on a good path. Any improvement is a good outcome. That's really powerful for somebody like me with my, you know, the way my brain works, that, yeah, I do want to solve it. And so I think in those terms, but just getting closer is sometimes enough.
I think I've shared this with you, but I've been on a health journey this year, trying to better my health so I can hopefully be around for more than a couple minutes. And I kept thinking back to how I was in college. I was a very active guy. I worked out a lot. And then found it very hard to be on that same level as an adult, and considered it a failure that I couldn't go to the gym and lift like I used to. I couldn't do all these things like I used to. It was just harder to keep up. And I had this all or nothing mentality. And then I ended up at nothing, right? If I can't do that, like, I've just failed. I'm going to put an X through the day. That's it. This year, I've taken those couple incremental clicks forward, and I just started walking. I'm like, well, walking is active. And I just got it in my mind that if I just walked a little bit every day, that'd be better than nothing. And it really led me down a journey that I would say has changed my life over the last couple of months. Hopefully I can keep it up. But it's that shift of, you don't need to fix everything all at once, because you can't. You just need to, like, find that little thing and start ramping it up, and then set that new baseline for yourself and keep moving yourself in a positive direction. And sometimes you just need, it just needs to register with you. And until that happens, it's hard to act on. But I love finding, like, that one small thing that you can change that's easy to do. Like, what's easier than walking? Like, I work at home. I don't do a lot. I could take a 20-minute walk at lunchtime and do that. Or just, you know, listen to a podcast while I walk, turn on Check Your Balances and walk till it's over and then come home. And the same is true with finances.
There's so many interesting parallels between fitness and finance, because a lot of it is about discipline. And you're right, it doesn't have to be shocking levels of discipline. It's like incremental discipline, right? It's incremental positive steps. The one thing where finance ends up being different is that eventually the progress is going to take off through the power of compounding. And there's an inflection point. And if you've hit it already, you probably know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't, and maybe you've never thought about it this way, but when you're saving early in your career or early in your accumulation journey, every dollar is a grind. Every single dollar that you save early on kind of sucks. Like, it's just hard to get to. It doesn't feel like it's growing. If you put that first $1,000 away and it earns 10%, you're like, whoop-dee-doo. I made $100, and look how hard that was to save and how long it took to grow. A whole year went by and I made $100. Who cares? Right? And there's an inflection point to me when the amount that you earn on your investments eclipses what you could possibly put in through your sheer savings power, right? Like, whether you're saving $500 a year, $5,000, whatever the number is, eventually you're going to get to a spot where your money earns more in a single calendar year than you could possibly do in your best year of saving. And you go, oh, wow. Right? Like, that point is where the thing basically takes off like a rocket. and your ability to let them, that might not be until your 50s or 60. Like legitimately, when we talk about Warren Buffett's wealth accumulation, so much of it has been after the age of 65 because of that phenomenon, right? Like Warren Buffett's wealth accumulation, even though it was impressive in his like typical working age career, would have looked insignificant had he not continued and let that compound. Like that wouldn't be a name we all know. And everybody's got a little bit of that path, that journey to their own money, where eventually it's going to take off and run. And you get that, that's where it gets fun. But getting to that inflection point, it feels like working out every day. You go to the gym, you lift, you run, you do whatever you do, and you come home and you don't look any different. You don't feel any different. Maybe you feel sore and you're like, wow, that kind of sucks a little bit, but at least I feel like it was working. But that's really what it feels like for that early part of the journey. And eventually it just takes off.
You just have to put yourself in that position and not give up, because it is decades. Talk about thinking long-term. Like it's a long time of saving before you get to that inflection point. So you just can't stop because it feels hopeless. You just need to keep taking little steps forward so that you have the opportunity to get there.
Yeah. I mean, this is stuff that can lead. In preparation for doing this show, I watched a video and it was heartbreaking, and it's probably why my mood feels so somber, because I watched this like a half hour ago, and it was a video from Tammy Lally speaking at a TED conference in Orlando, and she's a financial planner and financial coach. And I don't want to retell her story, but ultimately her brother commits suicide from dealing with financial pressures and just held so much trauma. And certainly, like, we're not therapists. We're not qualified to help people that are feeling that level of life and the weight on them. Like, we're just not. We're numbers guys. But I think the reason we're talking about this is that we also try to be compassionate numbers guys. We recognize that this is not just about a number, and that the number doesn't define you. Then the money helps people to hopefully get where they're going, and to get there in a way and a fashion that feels good to them. And so I think that's why we're talking about this, that if you're out there, if you're feeling that pressure, if you're feeling that financial shame and avoiding this, that there's hope out there. There's just little baby steps is all you need to do, and it starts moving in the right direction pretty quickly.
Have we talked about the movie What About Bob on this podcast before?
I haven't seen it, so I don't know if we've talked about it or not, but I don't remember that.
All right. It's a hilarious movie with Bill Murray and Richard Dreyfuss. Ironically, Richard Dreyfuss is a therapist. Bill Murray is a patient of his. Richard Dreyfuss wrote the book called Baby Steps. And every time we talk about this, as ridiculous a movie as it is, that's what I think about. And he teaches him the tool of baby steps. And Bill Murray's constantly saying, baby steps to this, baby steps to that, as a way of like getting him to do the next thing and overcome his fear. It's hilarious, or at least I thought so. Child Dan thought What About Bob was hilarious. But I thought I'd throw that out there as a nostalgic movie that people can look up if they want to.
Baby steps it is. Next week, I think we're doing a mailbag episode. I don't think we've done a March mailbag yet. So if you've got questions for us, if you made it to this point in the show and you haven't completely checked out on what we're talking about today, first of all, we appreciate you. Second of all, check your balances at outlook.com is the email address for our show. We're going to be digging in, seeing what you, our listeners, want to hear about. That'll be coming up next week. And we can also talk about our road trip, see if we had any breakthroughs while sitting in the car together.
Yeah, at Check Your Balances on Instagram. We'll try to go live a little bit, maybe answer some questions while we're driving, maybe make some hot food takes, maybe listen to some Dave Matthews Band.
By the time this comes out, this will have already happened. So either way, you should still follow us on Instagram.
Do it. Yeah, do it.
Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. If this is helpful, we hope you got something from it. But take care with those around you that are dealing with some of this stuff. It's not an easy journey alone. And having friends and support is important. So Thank you all. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.